6.5%, was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round-by-round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris. He is Chris. This is Chris and Chris's Canucks commentary, otherwise known as C4 version 2.0. Welcome, Chris Faber.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, Chris. It's always good. And I'm happy that your name is spelt the correct way as well. Maybe you can speak to this. I think Chris, C-H-R-I-S, That's how it should be spelt. And I've lost trust in other people who do not spell it that way, whether it's C-R-I-S or K-R-I-S I've seen. It's just, there's something good about the H in there. And I think that's what ruins it for some people. I trust anybody who spells it C-H-R-I-S.
Growing up, the number of times that it was C-R-I-S or K-R-I-S, like I played soccer, I played softball, and I had coaches who like saw me twice at minimum per week spell my name wrong because to them, the H did not belong, and it drove me nuts. I also had one coach who he knew me as Chris, but I didn't realize he thought there was a T at the end, like it was Christ, and he would put that down on like a team list, and Christ was playing for the Richmond Fury, so.
Yeah, absolutely lighting it up, I'm sure, Chris. But are you a Chris or a Christopher? Full name Christopher?
Full name Christopher. And then, but I mean, that's the name that my wife or mom uses when I'm in trouble, or people who, like, I grew up in the era, and I talk about this, how I needed to put my legal name on payroll to get paid. Like, if you went into a bank back in the day and it said Chris Golden, oh, no. That's not you. Now, like, I don't even think banks look at the check. They trust everything you say. But I prefer Chris. And Christopher comes out once in a while. But I won't correct necessarily, but I will if someone asks. I prefer Chris.
That's one thing that's been passed down from my mother to my fiance is when I hear Christopher, it's not good.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing that people don't notice is like, so I don't know if you've done this, but a lot of emails that you have, whether it be for work or you just want to use your name, use Christopher. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you go up and whatever, like say back in the day, maybe Blockbuster needs your email or something, or nowadays, whatever you sign up for. And then you're like, oh, like you don't notice that Christopher is 11 letters long. Like it's a long name when you actually type no.
The, when computers and whatnot really started taking hold, a lot of names or name fields had a 10 letter maximum for first name. And so the number of times I was Christoph.
So. Yeah, that's pretty good too. That's the E at the end there would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. But have you ever been called Topher?
So my brother, who's a year younger than me, couldn't say my name when he was very young. And it was just Fur. It was everywhere I went, you'd hear Fur, Fur, Fur. Like that's what he called me. Cause my mom calls me Christopher still, like today. Like she'll call me Christopher when she's talking about you, she talks about Christopher. So my brother heard that. He couldn't say the Krista part of it. It was just Fur. So when I was a kid, it was very much Fur all the time. But not Topher. I feel like I might have used that in like a username back in the day. But actually writing like toe fur as in like fur on the toe.
Yeah, I've done Topher with usernames where my like Lightforce is taken somehow because some jerk took it. Then I'll use like Topher G, stuff like that. But a couple jobs ago, my team, they were talking about Topher Grace. And I'm like, wow, that's a pretty unique name. I'm like, what are you talking about? Topher, like who would name their kid Topher? Someone who called their kid Christopher? And it like blew their mind that someone would choose to go with Topher. I mean, as he has instead of Chris. And I'm like thinking, you know, that's like, you know, 3D chess. Cause growing up, I had like, I can't remember what grade it was in school. There were five Christophers. Right. So that's the year where I started calling everyone by their last name because it was just easier to keep track. And then if you add the Christine and Christina's, there are, I think, eight of us in that classroom in a iteration of Chris. We all went by Chris. Like even the girls was like Chris. So
I remember like the same kind of age when you start being called by last names. It's funny, like in our friend group, there was me and another Chris. Mm-hmm. And his last name, I guess, wasn't as cool as mine. So he just stuck as Chris. And I obviously went by Faber, which kind of, you know, feels like a half decent nickname-ish slash last name. So his wasn't his wasn't the cooler last name, or maybe he was just a cooler person in general and he got to earn the name of Chris. And I just got stuck with the last name. But it's stuck up to this point, I think, so far. Yeah.
Well, and I think in fairness to the to yourself, but also to those who are listening to the show, most may know you as Faber. I mean, it's often what you're referred to as, and not so much as Chris. And again, I'm not trying to denigrate the first name because we share it and all that. But it acts as a good segue because we are here to talk about the Vancouver Canucks. And what took place today was a press conference that sounded very Jim-esque, which is interesting because that could apply for the last like 12 years of Jim. But we're not talking about the same Jim, and that's somewhat surprising. Or not. We're going to get into that. We're going to talk a little bit about the fact that the Vancouver Canucks are coming home off a win, which is amazing and whatnot. But one thing we did want to touch on straight off a rewind is the passing of Gino Ogic.
Yeah, I mean, we started our show with this today, and it's a tough turn to take off of this because, man, we knew before he passed how much Canucks fans absolutely love Gino. I told a story today that, we always saw him in the press box and he was always out of there pretty quick, getting in the same elevator as us. And the last thing I remember was like, it was a jam-packed day. The last Canucks home game that there was, I can't even remember who they played against. Who would have been? It would have been the Avalanche. It was a 4-2 win against the Avalanche. And Gino's looking at all the media members like pouring out of the press box, getting to that media elevator. And it was the same one he took because it takes you down to, you know, parking level zero or whatever it is, the security area. And he would get out there, but sit there and he's about to hop in. And Gino's a big dude. He looks at the room in the elevator and then he looks at a couple other media members. He's like, you guys are more important than me. He just like sends people through. And I still remember it was the second loudest I've ever heard Rogers Arena. Was so the first is game 7 against the Blackhawks when I was in there for that was still, I feel like I said that last time I was filling in to co-host here, but I can't stop bringing up that moment. But the second loudest was the first time Gino came back to Rogers Arena after dealing with illness, would have been 2013-ish 2012-ish kind of timeline, and it was the first time he was back in Rogers Arena and just showed him on the camera, you know, he was back at Rogers Arena, back supporting the Canucks, and that arena went nuts, like just the Gino chants going. And you know, Gino was a little bit before my time. I didn't watch him play. I didn't see him in person. Mm-hmm. But just to see like some of the clips of what kind of impact he made on this team is incredible, and the fan base more specifically. I mean, you hear everybody has a story about it, right? Like everybody seemed to run into him out at lunch or something in Vancouver, and then he just lit up a room. So it's a huge loss for so many different communities, not just Canucks fans, but you know what Gino's meant to so many people. It's a horrible loss, and he definitely fought for a long time. From, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of exactly what was going on health wise with him, but we know that it was a long battle for him, and he's definitely going to be missed, not only in the Canucks community but hockey community, Indigenous community. Everybody's going to very much miss what this man did, because it sounds like he was a hell of a man from the people that really knew him.
Yeah. I grew up in the era of Gino. I mean, I started paying attention to the Canucks in the '80s when they weren't that good. And when he sort of arrived in the '90s was when like that team had a whole lot of character, and some would say characters. Gino was a character. I mean, he had this presence in every story you hear, whether it be from those he played against, those he played with, and even some of the younger players that looked up to him. You know, stories from Carey Price and Ethan Bear and what have you. He had this way about him that was so ingratiating. And, you know, it's rare to see that type of player you know, in the role that he was. And this is not a knock against like the enforcer or anything, because many of them are very much, you know, like the kind of souls. But there was something about Gino that he was, you know, he described himself as, you know, a kid from the res. And I don't know, you know, what that might be, but based on what I interpreted as like any kid that could potentially dream of aspiring to do something, you know, as big as he did. He the impact though that he had, like when he hit the ice, he came up in an era of really sort of hardworking, you know, blue collar hockey in Vancouver. And yes, Pavel Bure was the opposite to that. Pavel Bure, I'm not necessarily knocking the hardworking blue collar. He was not, and hardworking so long it was on the right side of the red line. But the Gino component, here was a guy who, and they showed the clip today, who would go after anyone if you outright looked at one of his teammates the wrong way. Like there was a clip against the Blues where he was taking on all comers, skating around the ice. And I don't know who it was who tried to come by with like a clothesline to stop Gino. And Gino's like, yeah, dip. Okay, let's go. But when I think about the one time I had an opportunity to sort of be in the same airspace as him, he was the most popular person in the room, hands down. This room contained alumni such as Kirk McLean, Cliff Ronning, Trevor Linden, like the players of my era, and Gino Ojic. And yeah, Kirk got attention, Trevor got attention, Cliff was getting attention. Gino, I couldn't get close to him. I mean, I could have maybe forced my way over there, but everyone wanted to talk to him. And he's just, you know, talking to everyone.
Yeah, I think the other thing was just like seeing some of the photos of him, whether I think it must have been the early 90s, but just like the smile that he had was just like, it was like an inviting smile, right? Like it looked like that. And it just kind of like when I have met him and seen him over the time, I've never really had like a long conversation with him, but always little quick things here and there. And it's just like, he just always had that, like, he has like an inviting smirk now. Like that's something that definitely just could tell that this guy was, I don't know, you get a good vibe from certain people. And I always, like, I never knew this guy. Like, I didn't know him personally. I didn't know him, but I just, like, you walk by and you had a good vibe. And some people just do that. And it feels like Gino was one of them. I can, like, we're going to hear stories, obviously, in the next couple weeks here from people that have been around him, I'm sure, whether, you know, it'd be on podcasts or radio or anything. You're going to hear a lot of stories, and I can't wait for it. Because, like, I know what he's like as a person just passing by, or like you said, getting a chance to meet fans or something like that. Imagine what it was like to be his teammate. Like how many good stories we're going to hear about this guy. So yeah, I mean, to, you know, in your young 50s, it's too soon. And especially on a guy who, you know, definitely battled for a long time from what it sounds like.
He did. And then he if there is really a good description of Gino, is a guy that, you know, never turned down a fight. And more often or not, came out on the right side of one. And arguably, I mean, this is a guy that was given 2 weeks to like maybe a month diagnosis when he was diagnosed as having, I think it was called amyloidosis, something along those lines. It's like a blood disorder, hardening of the heart, if I recall. And that was, gosh, like 9 years ago. And again, you're right, 52, far too young. But 9 years from weeks to months, that's because this guy decided that he would, you know, fight through almost everything. And you know, I know someone through Canuck social media who has known him for quite some time. And I mean, they had planned to get together on Wednesday. So, I mean, it is sad that Vancouver has lost, you know, Gino. And I don't know if people outside of Vancouver really, I mean, players, they know of Gino, but I don't think people understand the impact he had. Like the city of Vancouver has lowered the flag at City Hall with Gino's passing. Like that's the impact he has had on the city. Not a star player, not like, you know, all-star in the NHL's eyes, but us here in Vancouver, if you grew up with Gino, I honestly think he could probably knock Trevor Linden off the popularity podium.
Oh, I mean, I agree. And like you said, you were there to at least witness it, Chris. So I just, you know, I think it's, I don't know. It just feels like that role of, listen, we all like someone who protects, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you're, it's, you know, I see it with my spouse all the time, whether it's how she protects me ways or how I see, you know, I always thought that was the way that you should do it with, you know, when you're in school, protect people, don't let people get bullied or pushed around. And it's interesting to see that dynamic go into sports, and you don't see it as often, but I think back in those days, it was something that happened often. It felt like Gino came in and stopped having the Canucks be pushed around. He was there to protect the players. And I mean, that's an incredible role for someone to play. So obviously a huge fan favorite in Gino. Like it's going to be very different feeling around the organization. You could hear it from Jim Rutherford, how he started the press conference today, how much it meant just kind of hearing it from his voice. And I know that, like, I don't want to say he was at every single Canucks home game this year, but I saw him at almost every single Canucks home game this year. And, you know, very much going to miss getting an opportunity to even share an elevator with the dude. So, yeah. Tough weekend for sure.
The news of Gino's passing broke during their game on Sunday. And at the end of what had been a very tough road trip, the Vancouver Canucks, when Anna, or I guess Jay and I, because Anna wasn't here last week either, when Jay and I spoke, had just lost to the Jets in a pretty solid fashion. Jay and I had sort of looked ahead and thought, you know, maybe Florida might be a team they could beat. And we had thought maybe Pittsburgh might be a point to be had. Vancouver came out real well against the Penguins and then lost 5-4. They put up a decent fight against the Lightning, but lost 5-4. I thought they did better in Florida, lost 4-3. And with the news on Sunday, Gino had passed, when at the time, I think the Vancouver Canucks were down 2-0. You know, it rightfully so, you know, took over sort of the narrative of Canucks social media and just the Canucks themselves. And honest to goodness, I had to look at my notes to realize the Vancouver Canucks did actually come back to win that one in a shootout. Probably the one game I don't think anyone had necessarily given the Vancouver Canucks an opportunity to win. So I ask you this, they won one, will they win again?
I mean, they got the Blackhawks on the 24th. So
yes, that's a team that knows how to tank.
That is a team that is tanking better than the Vancouver Canucks, even though Jim Rutherford today mentioned that maybe they are tanking here in Vancouver. But you got the Lightning coming up here on Wednesday, following that up with the Avalanche, the Oilers. I tell you what, this the more you watch Connor Bedard highlights and the more you watch this Canucks team, you wonder if there's something a little magic happening here in Vancouver, right? Like, you know, these, I don't go into a lot of Canucks games now thinking, listen, I mentioned the Blackhawks there, but I'm not like confident that the Canucks are going to beat the Blackhawks. And I see that team being one of the weakest ones in the NHL. So yeah, it's hard to, like, you can't go into the role, like you can't go into the calendar anymore and pick a spot where the Canucks are probably going to have three in a row, right? Like that's not something you can do right now with this team. So listen, they'll win again. But I don't know if they're winning again like that. And that's the biggest problem, actually, maybe with the Canucks, is like right when you think they're out, they come right back. And it was like, you know, I'm writing the outline for my show on Monday and I'm doing this on Sunday afternoon, getting things kind of prepped. And you know, the first couple things I'm writing is, you know, an 0-5-0 road trip, all this stuff. Right when I count them out, that's when they score and light things up, come back, win the game. It's just it's a difficult spot for the Canucks because I don't think the playoffs are in the conversation anymore. So some Canucks fans don't want the Vancouver Canucks to win anymore.
Mm-hmm. I'll admit I can get a little down on this team from time to time, smidge. I don't have faith that the Vancouver Canucks could execute a tank at this stage of the season to put themselves in a good position to claim that first overall pick, but I've also come to understand the Vancouver Canucks will never possess a first overall pick. So I'm just, I can't be disappointed when they don't get it, despite having an opportunity to do so. I think for me, what I want is not so much wins, but games where the sort of give a damn meter existed. Like, and I even now, when that would potentially put the Vancouver Canucks into, you know, the playoff hunt fringe, which is not where me and others have suggested they should go, I have more time for a team that puts in what I can see as a solid effort. Like, I put up with the Canucks in the 80s and 90s, and yeah, maybe some of those teams weren't that good, but at no point would I be looking at, like, I mean, I harp on JT Miller all the time, but how many times in this road trip that I see JT Miller shut down, not seem to give a damn? I actually made a comment just over a week ago when someone had said that JT Miller didn't give an F, and I'm like, well, that's because he dropped them all last season. He has no more to give.
Yeah, either that or he's smacking him on the crossbar somewhere. But I'm with you in the camp of, like, the give a damn meter is interesting for me. I found it really, and it's weird, for some reason I've talked about the Montreal Canadiens so much over the past, like, few days here. But when PK Subban comes out and gives a speech kind of pregame there to those players and mentions, like, you play hard for these fans, they're going to love you. Mm-hmm. And the Canadiens are in the middle of a rebuild. The Canucks, maybe not, because apparently they're in a retool. But the part that I think needs rebuilding the most is something that Jim Rutherford mentioned today. And that's playing like a team, and how, to me, like, this team, this Vancouver Canucks team, is wildly inconsistent. And I think it starts with a lot of that give a damn meter. Are you going to come out and give a damn every single night? Or are you going to give a damn when Bruce Boudreau is getting fired, if you lose this game 5-1 again, right? Like, how many games do you lose at home 5-1? And then you're going to come out and have that huge game where Pettersson rips it up against the Kraken. After back-to-back 5-1 losses at home, Pettersson comes out. And if you lost that game 5-1, you think Bruce Boudreau is coming back the next game? I don't think so, after three games at home losing 5-1. So that type of feeling towards the game of hockey needs to be there on a more consistent basis. And it just feels like you could see it even in the Carolina game, where when that second goal goes in, it feels like a lot of players maybe check out, right? Yeah. And I think that's a very difficult spot, because if some of your leaders check out, and I think JT Miller is one of those leaders, if he checks out, you don't want that bleeding into the next level of leadership, where, to me, the leaders of this team and the biggest ones on the ice are guys like Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And I don't think they're checked out. These guys want to win more than anybody on this planet. They want to win hockey games. That's in the blood of Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And I just really don't want to ever even start to consider getting to a point where winning doesn't matter as much to a guy like Elias Pettersson. You want that winning mentality to be something that he keeps throughout his hockey career. And I think he will. Like, I really think he will. But I wonder if they ever get to the point, and I don't want it to get to the point before he needs to sign a contract here at the Vancouver Canucks, but I bet if that thought crosses his mind, he's talked about wanting to be in a winning environment and with a winning team for his next contract. You don't want to see a player like him have to go through, you know, the prime of his career, hopefully in the mid-20s, young 20s. You don't want to see him go through that prime and winning not be something that motivates him enough. And I don't think we're going to see it, because I have a feeling he wants to win so bad that it might not be here in Vancouver. It's very difficult, right? Like, that's the thing that I don't think every player has that. Like, I don't think they have the same win more than anything feeling towards a game of hockey like in Elias Pettersson. I just really don't want to see that lost from a guy like him because of the environment that we're seeing with the Vancouver Canucks. And that's a scary thought. Like, it is a scary thought as someone who follows this team, covers this team, has to deal with this team 24/7 basically on my brain, unfortunately, because I can't even go to work to escape it, because I go to work and I have to cover the Canucks. So, like, there are certain things you want, like, this team just to do. And I think that's one of the bigger worries for me is, I don't think the roster needs as much rebuilding as the culture does right now. And that's, it shouldn't take Kevin Bieksa coming in and telling you to stay late for practice. It shouldn't take Bieksa telling you certain things like he did in his speech that really felt like they affected the team. I was there the practice after Bieksa spoke, and they were doing, it was different. Like, it was a different feeling after that. And I'm like, man, you can somebody should be motivating them from the inside on this, or maybe BX just needs to be on the bench or something. Like, it's wild to me.
You know, we'll get into, cause there was a press conference that took place to get today. And I sort of wanted to end off rewind with it, cause arguably it's the last thing that's occurred. But before we do get there, prior to, you know, the news of Gino's passing, which rightfully so dominated the conversation, news came out last week that Tanner Pearson suffered a setback in his recovery, had to have another surgery, and his season is likely done. And, you know, Canucks fans thought, okay, that's too bad. You know, a lot of people have all the time in the world for Tanner. And Patrick Johnson, who happened to follow the team on the road, friend of the show, he asked Quinn Hughes a question about, how you feel about the news today about Tanner Pearson. And Quinn suggested that, I'm paraphrasing here and reinterpreting the word somewhat, Tanner got done dirty.
Right.
And yeah. And that set off a storm, both one in the Canucks Twitter sphere, the Smeal sphere, as I would call it. Canucks media obviously peaked up. The NHL peaked up because, what's going on here? The PA is also interested. And as a result, I have never seen a team schedule themselves a press conference to come in and talk about a situation such as this, especially a Vancouver Canucks team who, how long has it been since, Rutherford or Alvin had a press conference to get in front of the media and address questions outside of maybe spots on like Sportsnet or Hockey Night, what have you, and have been trotting Bruce out to answer questions that, he's in a tough situation about. It was kind of surreal for this to all happen. And then the press conference went in many directions, but you're closer to the situation than I am. Like with the Pearson issue, there seems to be some smoke. Do you agree?
I mean, you said it, like the exact quote from Hughes was that wasn't handled right. And multiple surgeries now. I think that if that quote doesn't come out from Quinn Hughes, we're thinking, was it an infection? Was it, a surgery gone wrong? Or now that we have the context from Quinn Hughes saying that wasn't handled right, that's what we have to work with. That is the leading information we have on the story. It's coming from the player who says that wasn't handled right. That's a massive quote. There's a reason why this was, one of the first things that was talked about on Hockey Night in Canada on the Saturday. This is, it's another story in the season of the Vancouver Canucks that just can't stop crapping out stories. Like it's wild to see that we get to this point. And they came out today, the two doctors and Jim Rutherford spoke for 18 minutes before we really started to get into the hockey team. And before we go too much, because I know we're going to rewind back a little bit of the Rutherford stuff, I do want to give a lot of credit and praise to Jim Rutherford, because he spoke for almost an hour today. Spent about about 18 minutes with the two doctors handling the Pearson situation, but then he spent nearly half an hour just with us in the media asking him questions about the situation. Like, we got to a point where the PR the PR staff is normally like, okay, couple more questions. They said that, and then Rutherford was like, no, I'm here, we're here, like, keep going. And we went today with the media until there was no questions left. Like, we got to a point, and normally the PR staff steps in, okay, that's enough, like, whatever, wrap it up here. No, we just, like, we finished. Nobody had any more questions, so props to him for that, first of all. But yeah, it's tough to, like, I understand that things can happen in the medical world that obviously make complications and situations like that. It's very unfortunate for Tanner Pearson, who wasn't having a great season, but no player should have to go through multiple surgeries. I don't care how bad of a season you're having to go what he's gone through this year, is a tough spot to be in for any player who now, kind of like reading between the lines here and from some of the reports we've seen out there from, top guys like Elliot Friedman and stuff, not sure what the future of Tanner Pearson's playing career is at this point. That's difficult no matter what you think of the player, cap space and all that crap. it's unfortunate to hear that questioned. I mean, we've heard that about Tucker Poolman a lot and heard a little bit more about that today as well. But for this to come from what felt like and what we heard was a 4 to 6 week injury. Yeah. This context from Quinn Hughes, I think, adds a lot to it, because otherwise it could have just been, we would have really known. But to hear him say something like that, I've said it for a while. I really do think that Quinn Hughes is, like, I think he's potentially the best future captain of this team. And people can go back and say the stuff about JT Miller doing that. I think the JT Miller captainship may have sailed off a little bit. But I also think back to, if you remember Brock Besser's presser last year at the end of the season, which was very difficult. I was in the room for that as well. Some of the questions that were being asked of him, I was extremely uncomfortable for him in that spot to answer some of these questions. And if you go back and watch that, I believe it's Pettersson, and maybe I feel like it might have been Garland or Demko was the fourth player up there. I can't remember exactly, but Quinn Hughes was the one who stepped in every time when it was getting difficult for Brock Besser to listen. Like, the questions that were being asked and the situation he was put in was so difficult, but it was Hughes, and he was stepping up and you know, that's enough, whatever, moving on, or he would answer the question or something like that. And I just look at that. That's a leader. Like, that's a leader. And in the day-to-day answering the captain has to do in a Canadian market, those type of pressure things mean a lot to me as a captain. That's why I look at Quinn Hughes and I think, this is a leader. He spoke out again about something like this. Is he speaking for the room? Not every player, probably, but for him to come out and say this as a quote that's going to be out there, like Patrick Johnson did, as somebody in the media who's on the road with this team, maybe somewhat of another leadership move there in my eyes.
Yeah. I honest to goodness, did not know that about Quinn. It reinforces a conversation that I know we've had on this show about, you know, potential future captains, because I think if you will listen to the press conference today, Bo Horvat's not going to be a Vancouver Canuck much longer. You know, Quinn's name comes up in the conversation. I think we settle on Petey, not JT, please. And JT can keep an A if he sticks around, or Quinn.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between a Canadian market and an American market, maybe, where look at what Bo's had to do for the last, what is it, 3 years now? Like, day to day, hey, Bo, the team's still not good. What do you have to say about it? I don't think that's going to be something that Pettersson maybe even wants to do.
Yeah.
I think that in that situation, if you think worst case Ontario here, Quinn Hughes might be a better guy to be the one talking for the team on a day-to-day basis about why aren't you guys winning? Why aren't you guys winning? Pettersson is, you know, he's going to run out of death stares, you know, if they have a bad season. So well, I
genuinely would wonder, at what point will PD go and light whomever asked the question on fire, not only with stare, but with whatever the response would be. And it would be like deadpan delivery. Not only did I just, you know, and you, your soul is mine. Like, I feel Petey could potentially have that impact.
I'm wondering if that's what happened to Drantz or Batch, and that's where their hair's gone. Maybe that was something behind the scenes that we didn't see. So, now I got to be worried. I still got some curls up here.
This is why you don't ask Petey the questions that he does not wish to answer.
Sorry, if I could just add to that too. I also think that Pettersson is such a good, and this is something I've learned from being in the room more, is he's such a great person to ask a great question to. Like, he's my favorite player when I, in my mind, I feel like I have a great question. I think he gives the best answer to a great question. And I think he appreciates a really good question. And that's the thing where it's like, that's why I don't really want him to be the one answering every day. I want to be able to hear Pettersson give a great answer to a great question instead of just a, you guys lost 5-3 again. What did you think? Like, he's not the type of person who should kind of be there day to day answering that, in my eyes. I think he's the one where, you know, you win 5-4, you lost 5-4. What happened in this situation here? What was happening? Like, that's when I think Pettersson is best with the media. And in my eyes, I think Quinn is just in a better spot moving forward to be this team's captain, I think.
Well, getting into the press conference, Bo Horvat, I mean, I sort of want to touch on that. Jim Rutherford said that they have made what he feels is their best offer to the Horvat camp, you know, based on evaluation. He acknowledged that Bo is having a career year. And I found it interesting that he had sort of posited that Bo Horvat wants to make some money. I feel that that is the trying to go on attack here, because we know we're going to take some heat when he goes somewhere or we trade him. But if you don't like Bo Horvat, you're somehow discounting the fact he will get paid on the market. And those who have been in the Horvat camp all along are wondering, why did you sign JT Miller over your captain? Like, you had two guys, both of which were going into the same situation. You made it very clear where your priority is, and now you want to come back and say, we still love you too? That doesn't work. Like, I am sad to think that we're not going to see Bo Horvat as a Canuck. Like, I honestly don't know how they work it out at this point. Is there a way?
No, I don't think so. He's got a very good agent who makes a lot of money, and that agent makes a lot of money from getting his players a lot of money in free agency or re-signing a big contract. And unfortunately, I don't think the Canucks have the space or have set themselves up to have a position to really sign Horvat for what he, up to this point in the season and this point in his career, is literally like rightfully due, right? Like, he's one of the top goal scoring players in the league. He's been used in a matchup role for how many years here for the Vancouver Canucks? He's had no wingers to play with for half of those years. And I couldn't root for somebody more to go win a Stanley Cup than Bo Horvat. I don't want to say it, but like, even if he goes to the Bruins, like, and they're on a tear with this team right now. I don't know. I think they just lost like their first regulation loss on home ice this season, which is crazy. We're halfway through the season. I think that's the only one maybe I won't root for Bo Horvat to win the Stanley Cup, maybe if he goes to the Bruins. But I want to see this guy have success. I really think he deserves it. He has carried so much water for this organization over the years. And I got to think it's just worn on him to a point where even if the Canucks had a ton of money to give to him, for him, like, it's gotta, you gotta think he'd be happier somewhere else. Like, he's had some really tough things to deal with here in Vancouver. And I think a lot of that has been the situation around him, obviously, with this team. But I mean, this guy has been here since the team started talking about a retool after the 2011 and 12 teams, right? Like, it's wild to think of the road he's had to go through. I can't think of a guy wanting out more. Like, and it's not like he's made that public or clear, but like, if I was in that situation, God, I'd be ready to go wherever. Like, if you had like a no trade clause, and I always thought that was strange about Horvat too, the contract he signed, you're giving no trade, you know, some of the players that got no trade in their contract, but Horvat never had one. He's never had one. It's wild to me. That's like another, you know, cherry on top of this whole situation is you can't trade Tyler Myers. But you can trade the captain, Bo Horvat. He doesn't have any trade protection. It's another wild kind of cherry in the whole situation here.
Hey, another player that can be traded this year is JT Miller.
Yes. Your last chance.
Not that that'll happen. And it sort of, you know, ties in because, you know, Jim had said he had come in thinking he needed to free up cap space, but then realized how hard it was. And he had inherited quite a few bad contracts. No surprise. But did he envision teams not knowing these contracts were bad? Like, I don't quite understand what the game plan that he and his front office had. But the connected tissue here to JT Miller, his own management group was the one who gave Miller a contract he doesn't worry about because the cap's always going up. It's okay to throw money. So, wait, what is it? Is it JT Miller is the reason why you can't keep a player like Bo Horvat and make deals? Is it the bad? Like, it feels to me that you're trying to do many different things with that one slice of cake, and you can't have it every which way.
Oh, it's true. I mean, that is the situation. I mean, the money that JT Miller's about to start getting next year could have very easily been Bo Horvat's. And it even sounds like a lot of the reports we heard that it probably would have been less if they would have made that decision in the summer to go with Horvat. It probably would have been less. And then you would have been looking at this season and thinking, geez, 30 goals at the halfway mark? We like that. We like what Bo Horvat's doing. This is great. This is awesome. And hey, we also got that that prospect coming that we traded JT Miller for. That could be I mean, I don't know. It's so wild. Some of the decisions with this team where it's just like, they make a decision. You're like, maybe that'll work out. Maybe JT Miller will be good for 3-4 more years, 80, 90 point guy. Maybe he'll figure some things out and he can play center. And it's like, or they could have traded him for whatever that deal was back, that Stat reported. Was it Hedl, Lundqvist and a first or something like along those lines. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, that would have been cool. That's like it felt like a slam dunk, you know, when you look back at it now, and it just feels like two decisions where you need to kind of hope for everything to fall into place for it to be a good decision. And this one now, the situation that presents itself for me and what this team can do, I mean, trading Horvat for an absolute haul, he's everybody's number one on the trade deadline. You got to. Like, you have to trade him at this point. I think you need to do the same thing with Luke Shen. I also think you got to do the same thing with Andre Kuzmenko. Like, these feel like the decisions where they are alley-oops presenting themselves for you to slam them on, like, a 5-foot hoop. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to really have a good takeaway here and actually start to do something that is a step down the road of a rebuild when we heard retool today, but like,
rebuild that. No. We have a good core and rebuilds take too long, 4 to 5 years.
But I am happy. We've heard Patrick Alvin all year. He doesn't like the rebuild word either. He's been saying build, build, build. And that's what I asked today. And I did get a word that started with RE. So I was happy. Like, at least it was, they are going to re something. So I guess is retool better than just build? Cause I feel like it might be.
I asked this question. Oh gosh, I think it might have been to Frankie Corrado, because I mean, when we had him on the show, he was talking about when he sort of was playing for the Canucks. I mean, he played under Tortorella, and that was the sort of the beginning of the whatever you want to call the past decade, something.
Call it a stale decade, isn't that what Tortorella called? What did he call the roster stale?
He's the roster stale. It needs to be blown up. It needs to become younger, quicker, and all that. And I mean, gosh darn it, when you're agreeing with Tortorella, at you know, and then thinking back, I wish he was still around because, boy, it would have blown up. The fact remains, the Vancouver Canucks have not rebuilt. Teams who have, like the Colorado Avalanche, like there was a stat that showed like the Vancouver Canucks and the Avalanche, I think it was like in, was it 17? May have been even before that. They were like, boom, within points. Avs had a couple sort of tough seasons after that. And now look at them. Whereas the Vancouver Canucks, they had like, they were on sort of a static plane that have slowly declined, and a team that blew it up. And a team that has retooled. And, you know, back to your earlier point about building a winning culture and having players understand what it is to win. I think there is a lot of strength in that. Mm. But you need a win. Having people that know what it's like to win and winning are not the same thing.
Yeah, Jay Beagle isn't going to fix everything. That type of player is not going to come in. But I find it, you bring it up that like watching the seasons comparing the Canucks to the Avalanche. And it's almost like you could look back and maybe there's a chart you can build of like points percentage for the Canucks. And the last 10 years, you'd see all these very low spots. Then you'd see they made the playoffs playoffs. That to me is like that's as high as like anything can happen can go. That's where the anything can happen should show up when you're talking about this team, where it's like the Canucks could get to the playoffs next year. Like, it wouldn't shock anyone. I don't think that bad, even how bad this season goes. The Canucks could sneak into the playoffs next year. Anything could happen in the regular season. Look at what the Kraken are doing this year, right? Like, that's a very big surprise to me. Look at the Avalanche not in a playoff spot. Anything can mm-hmm. happen in the regular season to me. But look at the teams that have playoff success. And that's where anything can't happen. I know Drantz has made this famous of anything can't happen in the playoffs. And it, to a certain degree, man, it's very true. Unless you really...
But St. Louis.
Yeah. And I guess anything can happen, Chris. I guess I'm wrong. But I just... The goaltender got incredibly hot there in that one. And maybe that's the anything, right? Like, maybe that's the anything. Because I don't know anything about goaltending anyways. So, like, maybe that is the anything right there that I'm missing. But I look at the Canucks and how they made the playoffs in the bubble year. Making the playoffs was the anything can happen part, you know? Winning that round against a team that was dealing with COVID and just kind of out of it, that St. Louis Blues team that you just mentioned, like that was the anything can happen for. I don't think it gets much further than that down the road. So it's It is difficult. I also think it's so strange because Canucks fans, I feel like, are at the point where, like, they don't want to retool anymore. Like, they don't. Like, everybody's ready for that step back. And, like, a retool just feels like you're standing still. And it feels like, as a Canucks fan, you've just been standing still wondering what the hell's going to happen for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And at least taking a step back feels like you're moving. Like, there's movement. And that's better than just standing still with what this team has been. So that's kind of why, like, I, you know, that's what I asked Jim Rutherford today. Like, I asked him the rebuild thing. Like, that was where he gave the quote. It was about my question. I asked him the expectations for this team were to get into playoffs. And that's all that we've heard up to this point, right? Because I always think if you at least have a plan from the management group or the president or anything, if there's like a plan put out, then it gives us as podcasters, fans, media, anybody, an opportunity to judge the decisions that they're making with this team, right? Like, up to this point, we thought the Canucks were going for a playoff spot this season, right? Everything that was said in training camp, all that stuff, was about this team making the playoffs. JT Miller being signed, that's about making the playoffs. Trading for Oliver Ekman-Larsson, that's about making the playoffs. All that is about making the playoffs. So at least today, hearing that there's a retool, that should change certain people's minds on how they judge what the moves that this team make moving forward are. So I would have loved to hear rebuild, but like I said, it's better than build. I'll take retool.
Yeah, and Jim did say the word tank.
Yes, and he laughed about it.
Yeah. Even discrepancy though, a tank is where you purposefully try. You don't like, it's not the benefit of, well, we're just not winning, so that's a tank. No. There's something else that he said as well. He has been talking to coaching candidates, which is unbelievable. Not that he is talking to them. I think everyone under the sun understood there's probably something being said that is not being so transparently shared to the audience in front of the room. But if you're Bruce Boudreau, like, come on, why is the team, like, why not let him go, have some dignity? Like, I put in our rundown, like, when does Bruce get the stunner? And that's a reference to Kevin Owens here. One of his favorite, if not favorite, wrestlers. I don't also understand.
The easiest Halloween costume for me to pull off is Kevin Owens.
Throw on the shirt, have KO on the front, and off you go.
Literally. Like, do my hair a little bit different. Yeah.
Like, what is the interest of the Vancouver Canucks keeping him behind the bench?
I mean, you don't want to pay three coaches, I guess.
Okay, but then, right? Like, you know, if you're not wanting to bring Tockett in until the end of the season, and I use Tockett because everyone under the sun is reporting that that's essentially a deal that has been done. Let Bruce have some dignity. Slap an interim on anyone. Like, I just, it makes no sense. Like, the only thing that I could think of was like, okay, they just want to make this get to the end of the season. You can't be having the conversations that you're having at this stage, I don't feel, and then come out into the press and say, oh yeah, I'm having conversations.
Yeah, he said today he's been talking to people for 2 months. Like, and that's, you got to give Rutherford props for being honest. You got to love that about him. Like, how many presidents are going to come out and they say, no, we had some conversation for 2 months about a coach. This was his answer to a question that was asked about a replacement too. This wasn't just, have you been talking to coach? Like, this was talking about a replacement. The question was, and he talked about it for, you know, like you said, he's been talking for 2 months. It's an extremely tough spot for Bruce Boudreau, who the guy just loves to coach, right? He comes in, he loves to coach. We see him after practice. He's in normally a pretty good mood. You know, you see him after a loss and it kills him. Like, it's the times we had with Bruce Boudreau last season when this team was winning compared to what it is this year, it's a different person. And you feel bad for how the season has gone for Bruce Boudreau. He might be the guy in this organization that you just have to kind of feel for the most. I mean, he wants to win more than anybody. He wants to coach a winning team. He wants to win a Stanley Cup as a coach. And just the way that things have gone this season, I feel for no one in the organization as much as I do pretty much for Bruce Boudreau, I'd have to think. Like, it's a very tough spot that he's been in.
And I mean, if we were to rewind to the first after hours that Rutherford was on when asked about why didn't you give Bruce an extension? Well, Bruce got himself an extension. He's back this season, isn't he? You know, it was like, again, credit to Jim for his continued transparency and honesty. I'm upset at myself for why are you saying this? Because I want to hear it. But not at the sake of Bruce.
Yeah. And I think to make a counter argument as well, like you just did, but to my own point is if you don't want to pay a third coach, like you said, you know, make Mike Yeo that guy, make Trent call that guy, ride the season into whatever. Right. Like I think there might be something down the road with Jeremy Colleton, but for every rumor out there, it sounds like you're just waiting on Tockett to come in here. And it sounds like he's going to, you know, bring in Sergei Gonchar. We've heard today now. So like, I don't know. I don't know what that. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, right? Like, are you going to get the coach bump from I think you will. I think Gonchar is going to be and Tockett. I think that they're going to find something different. They're going to change certain things about this team and the way they play. And I think you're going to get a coach bump, not enough to get you in the playoffs, right? Like
enough to get you out of the, you know, odds of a Bedard.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It feels like a coach bump here. It gets you out of the Bedard sweepstakes and right back into that mushy middle.
Yeah.
That's the worst spot.
But that seems to be really the epitome of this Vancouver Canucks team that we have continued to pay attention to. Like, you know, we've talked about this at length already, but I was thinking back today when I started this show, like C4, this was the Jim Benning era. Like this was pretty much, you know, I guess it wasn't his year before, but like it hasn't changed tune and it's the epitome. It's the mushy middle team. It's what they've been.
And that's, I think you could, some people that might want to take a real positive look at a coaching change would be like, yeah, but winning will help build a culture for the next year. Back 12 months? That's exactly. Like all that winning they did with Bruce Boudreau didn't mean anything. They started out 0-7. So that's kind of back to my point earlier of like, I don't think the roster needs as much retooling as just the room and the something with this organization. I don't know, man. There's just some bad vibes around this team for a long time. And I tell you what, I don't know. Maybe these AI things that are coming out now where they're transcribing, they're writing things for you. I would love to hear one. If you could somehow input every minute of your show since before the Jim Benning era into some sort of AI thing and see what it would
chat GPT.
Yeah, exactly. Like, would that imagine like the movie script that it could write out if it was somehow able to take the hundreds of hours that you've done doing the show over the years, the type
In fairness, C4 and Pucks on Net. I mean, we've covered this team since essentially the same time. You're probably onto something. I should probably reach out to Shap and maybe he and I can partnership and get ChatGPT to run something together. We're going to take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
I wanted to talk about something that's actually a little more half full. It's what's going on up Highway 1 in Abbotsford. I talked a little bit about the team in Abbey with Jay last week, but I don't know if someone who follows Canucks prospects any better than you. Like, you know, credit to yourself who doesn't sleep, who seems to watch Canucks prospects play in every league imaginable. I don't know if there are any prospects that are playing in APAC, which maybe that's your window of sleep. But if that were to be the case, you'd probably be rocking 24 hours a day. But I wanted to talk to you about what Carlton's cooking up down there in Abbotsford. How is he so much different than Cull? Because it's arguably a very similar roster, is it not?
Yeah, I think you've got some very young players down there. Jim Rutherford mentioned it in his presser of, like, I think 13 or 14 guys under the age of 23. So Colleton's benefiting from getting a second year of a lot of these players to a certain degree, you could say. Second year of Danilo Klimovic, you know, second year of Tristan Nielsen, captain Chase Waters. That's got to help. But it was wild. I was doing a hit on Halford and Brough one morning, and they were asking about Abbotsford, and I was talking about it, and they were asked, like, what is Colleton doing well? And I was like, well, and I was talking about it, I was like, just from thinking, like, I think I watched an Abbotsford game that night, the night before, but I also watched a Vancouver game the night before. It was like a 4-7. It worked out well. I got to watch both. And then I watched the Abbotsford game, and I was like, they have, like, a forward so low, like, helping out the defenseman break the puck out. They also have forwards coming in and helping around the net instead of two defensemen going to one side. And I had this, like, realization as I'm giving the answer on Halford and Brough that, like, this is structure. Like, this is structure. I was like, the Abbotsford Canucks have structure. That's what it is. Like, wow, both defensemen don't go to the guy with the puck and leave the whole other side open. They stay in their spots, and a forward supports to add extra things. So, like, there's a lot there from Jeremy Colleton where I think that the structure is the big thing, and that's obviously a big word in the Canucks organization. Mm-hmm. But if you watch these Abbotsford games, like, I've seen the AHL, I've watched it for years now, and I'm not saying that Colleton's team is perfect with their structure. There's still an AHL team that has some huge lapses all the time, and that's why I think don't ever look at goaltending stats for the AHL. Like, Archer Seelovs is playing, I think, very good hockey this year. He's still sitting with a save percentage of 903, and you're like, oh, that's just above 900. That's incredible. He's playing really good in the AHL. There's a lot of scoring chances, but Colleton's got these guys playing extremely well in the situations where a player needs support, I think. And I think that it's a good spot where when you need an extra forward to support you down in your own zone in the corner, the right forward's there. It's not the second defenseman. So I think that in the situations where you're breaking out the puck and you need an extra forward deep to help you with, you know, gain a majority in a breakout instead of having a guy be covered by a guy, you have an extra man there who's open. It feels like they have some sort of game plan that just makes sense. Like, it was so funny, like, talking about this before I said it. And then I was like, wait, like, that's structure. And I was like, it clicked in my mind at that point, like at whatever, 7 a.m. when I was on Halford and Brough on like 3 hours of sleep. And it just made sense. Like, yeah, the Abbotsford Canucks, listen, they're still an AHL team, but they look like they have more structure than the NHL team with a lot of the things that they do in a game of hockey. And that's got to be props to what Jeremy Colleton's doing down there.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there are some that suggest, oh, give Colleton the opportunity to come up to Vancouver. But I, you know, think the counter argument is, one, why? Two, do you really want to disrupt what's going on in Abbotsford? And based on what Jim had been talking about, bringing in young players who have an impact, I think the tie-in there is that there may be players who have an opportunity next season under a new coach to perform. So I guess twofold. One, does Colleton get a chance in NHL sooner than later? And two, who is it that you like in the near future down there in Abbotsford to actually arguably have a chance at an NHL job?
Yeah, I'd say if Colleton had this team top of the AHL, he'd be probably having NHL teams knocking at the end of the season. But he doesn't have them there. I think they're third in the Pacific, fourth in the Pacific or something. So he's getting a lot out of a team that, listen, Cody Sievertson's a great example of someone else who follows this Abbotsford team. You know, obviously Anna follows this team as well. I think Anna would say that this team looked like it was going to be worse than it was last year. You lost some very important pieces from the Abbotsford Canucks team last year that wasn't great. Like, they got into the playoffs, they got swept in the playoffs there, but it felt like the roster was going to take a step back. But these young players have stepped up, and I think that you've got to give Colleton props there. But I don't think he's at the point, to answer your first question, where he's NHL teams are, you know, knocking on his door to get him into their he might have a deal out there somewhere at the end of the season. But I think the interesting thing about Jim Rutherford is, like, he seems to do a good job of, like, convincing people that this is the spot. And Vancouver, like, the Canucks organization has a plan probably for Colleton. And I bet Colleton's probably pretty happy about that spot that he's been put in. Because it's a good opportunity for him down there in Abbotsford. He's only an hour away from the NHL team. It's not like a situation where you're that far away from the big club. Big club's taking notice of what he's doing for sure. So there could be something down the road for him, or maybe it gets him into assistant job at the NHL level. But you got to like what he's doing right now. But I don't think NHL teams are coming just yet for him. And as for your second question, was it guys that are coming up soon to the NHL you want to know?
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, my thought is that next year there should be roster spots for the taking. Now, how many has to do with the contracts that the Rutherford's going to buy out in the offseason. So that's two. We just don't know which two. I mean, OEL was in the press box. So who knows? But is there anyone that you could say, yeah, this guy's going to, they're going to make it tough on the Canucks to send them back down?
I would love, and I don't think this is going to happen, but the Swedish trio of Linus Karlsson, Nils Höglander, and Nils Åman being like a new age fourth line after gelling together. These guys play together in the summer. Like, they play in exhibition games together in the summer. They practice together in the summer. This trio looks very good at the AHL level. Linus Karlsson's got 28 points in 35 games this year. If the Canucks commit to taking a step back, that would be a really fun line to watch in the NHL next year, be in a fourth line role where they play like 7-8 minutes a game. Like, that could be really fun. But as for, like, and that's just fun. I wouldn't bank on it happening. But as for players who are coming up next year, you're going to get Pod Colson back. You're going to get Höglander back for sure. I don't know if there's one guy who is kind of like in grade 12 about to graduate type of thing. Christian Willanen would be interesting. He's the all-star for the Abbotsford Canucks this year, but he doesn't have a contract with the Vancouver Canucks next season. There's not really a name, like, you could use Jack Rathbone maybe as an example, but everyone else feels like another year or two away from really being an NHLer. The closest you could probably say, maybe Justin Dowling, maybe Phil DiGiuseppe, but it's like, are these guys long-term fixes with the Vancouver Canucks? No. Are they going to potentially be NHL Canucks this year like Sheldon Dries has for the Canucks next season? Potentially. So those are the two names I'd probably mention as guys playing in the NHL next year. And as my grade 12 analogy was there, they're kind of like 24-year-old grade 12s. Like, they're a little bit older, but maybe they're ready for the job at this point.
They've extra seasoning in grade 12. They got held back a year, but that's helped in their advancement. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Like, you know, was it GED? There's no problem with one of those. Like,
No. I think go far on the GED.
And PDG, Phil DiGiuseppe, like, I still think he's got some NHL potential as like a fourth, third line guy. So I'm curious if we get a chance to see him this season, what he looks like at the NHL level. He's kind of like he's like the killer whale who like plays with their food before they eat it in the AHL. There's a lot of things where you're just like, what's he doing here? Like, he's too good for this type of thing. If Phil DiGiuseppe is going up against like a fourth line or a third pairing in the AHL, he's playing with his food. And like, he's a very good AHL player. I think that there's a lot in Phil DiGiuseppe's game that hasn't been unlocked at the NHL level yet. So I think he would be my guy to kind of think that he should be playing NHL games next season. And that's, of course, aside from Höglander and Pod Colson, who I think are just here to get their confidence and kind of, you know, work on a few different things before they get back to the NHL.
Certainly. And sort of one final prospect question. Who's making it worthwhile to stay up late to watch right now for the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, you know what? Without Pod Colson in the KHL, there's not a like 3 o'clock wake up anymore. The second division in Sweden. And actually, this was the best because like, When it was Höglander and Pod Colson, it was a lot of 4 o'clock starts in the morning and a lot of 7 o'clock starts. And they were a lot of back to backs because European hockey they like to play on Saturdays. They like to play on Fridays and they like to have weird times on Sunday. So it's nice now. The Swedish second division normally starts at 10 in the morning. So that's kind of the guy that I have to watch in Jonathan Lekkerimäki. So 10 in the morning is incredible. But now because I'm covering the Vancouver Canucks full time and I live beside the rink, I'm down at the rink at 10 o'clock. So a lot of the time, like, trying to have conversations with like all the other media members while like I'm looking down at like the score. And if I have to like rewind to like see if Lekarimäki was the one who scored. So I guess maybe it's a good thing that he hasn't scored a ton this year. He's got one goal in 22 games. So I haven't missed a lot from having to watch Canucks practice and watch Lekarimäki at the same time. But I will say one guy to be excited about, and we've, you know, we talk about it at the NHL level being excited about Elias Pettersson. I also think in the prospect pool, Elias Pettersson is the guy who has definitely climbed the most in my personal rankings of them. And by the way, I am working on the my top 10 rankings for Canucks Army. So that'll be out there soon. That's the, don't ask me for a plug at the end of the episode. That's my plug right there. Our top 10 prospect rankings will be coming up soon. And I'll tell you what, Elias Pettersson, what he did at the World Juniors, what he's doing at the SHL this year, 24 games in the SHL as an 18-year-old. And he's playing good. He does a lot of things that I really like. So Elias Pettersson's the prospect that I'm pretty excited about with this organization. And Klimovich as well. He's got he's got 16 points now in his last 19 games. We didn't really talk about him much on the AHL there, but 16 points in his last, like I said, 19 games. Seven of those are goals. So kid's putting up points. He's scoring goals. It's good to see from Klimovich, who had a horrendous start to the season.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that there are some, you know, pretty impressive up and coming young kids that would work really well in a 4 or 5 years time.
Yeah. And you could add more of those, or you could go for 24 year olds. And I hate it. Like I heard that today where it was like second chance NHLers. And I just thought, why not get a first chance prospect? What do you just do with your third round pick?
No, that takes too long. It takes, you got to develop them. You got to build up. Like, it takes a while. No, we don't. You guys can't. You've been tolerating this for 10 years. You don't have it. You to do another five. Ugh.
I thought, like, yeah, these guys that you're talking about maybe needing a second chance, they've already had a development run, right? Like, you know, like maybe you find something every once in a while with these players, but their shelf time, like their shelf life is much lower than getting a chance to draft and hand pick the player that you want to develop instead of taking this player and trying to develop them. Man, like, you know, you got to be pretty damn confident in your development team if you're just taking somebody else's scrap, and or maybe not scrap, but just like not handpicking the player that you see fitting into your development team, instead just putting your development team and hoping they fit on the player to find whatever it is. I mean,
I had someone refer to Jared McCann as being a prime example as a player who, you know, didn't work out in Vancouver, didn't work out in Florida, didn't work out in Pittsburgh, and look what he's doing in Seattle. So, you know, I think they were trying to posit that's your fourth chance. Well, Jared McCann, it's not that he didn't work out in Vancouver. He had a season and it was a see you later. Florida, he seemed to be doing well, but they then sent him to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, you know, like every other team, had to make people available. And yeah, he's had a turnaround in Seattle, but I would love first chance players.
I'd love it too. I just, you know, I would. That's the other thing. I'd love to. Like, I want to get back to the heydays of going from the KHL to the SHL in the morning, just having prospects every, like, at least with them, like, people. I don't think people care as much about Jonathan Lekarimäki's Corsi, but like when I was in the heydays of covering Höglander and Podkolzin, where I was like hand tracking or computer tracking, whatever you want to call it. I was compute, like just tracking his Corsi as games were going. And people really loved it. They like loved that Podkolzin had like an 80% Corsi that game. And now I can like tweet out the Corsi of Lekarimäki and everyone's just like, ah, whatever, blow. Like they just rip on it because it's like he hasn't scored in many games or anything like that. So I want to get to, selfishly, I'd love to see this prospect pool be blasted again, because that's like, that's my zone, man. I love covering prospects and hoping for the best.
Well, as we look to wrap things up, we've been going on forever. We got to get you on more often so that we can talk more frequently, but not as long, because I always feel like I'm taking too much of your time. What have you been up to these days? Because, you know, when you were last joined us, you were on the radio, what have you, but now you had mentioned you're covering the Canucks full time with Canucks Army. You're not having to stay up as late.
Yeah. You know what? I'd love to come back, because I know I always like people chatting about the AHL, and I'd love to chat with Anna. Love chatting with you, Chris. We could do this for another hour, but I love talking AHL. It's why I love chatting with Cody Sievertson's a great example. But I know Anna's locked in as well. So she's another person I'd love. I like having a conversation about the AHL team because, like, I'm the only media member out there who's like, I go in there and I have 5 minutes with whoever I want. Instead of a scrum for 5 minutes, it's me for 5 minutes with name AHL player here. So, like, I love to chat with someone else who watches AHL. But yeah, as for me, just full time working with Canucks Army right now. I live right at Rogers Arena. I, you know, get a chance to go to every practice in the morning. It's a blast. I'm living the dream that that I wanted when I found out that I couldn't be an athlete. So getting a chance to cover the sport's just as fun. And we're doing the show on YouTube, Quads and I, and just having a blast doing everything. It's nice to, I guess last time I would have been on here, it was like I was working three different jobs. I was also full-time at BCIT, and like things were incredibly hectic. And not like things have gotten much less hectic. I just don't have three bosses anymore. So that's nice just to have one instead and not have to do school. That's a great part as well. But yeah, just, you know, living it up and still talking prospects, still covering the team and just having a good time full-time on it.
Awesome. Living the dream is what's most important. That's what I'm doing. I always wanted to hear my own voice, and here I am recording a podcast. You, on the other hand, are, you know, the person that everyone refers to as knowing the most about the Vancouver Canucks, asking questions in French, and probably some of the most intelligent questions I've ever heard out of a presser. So well done, young man.
Thank you. I thought about it. We've joked about this as we're waiting for Bruce Boudreau after practice. A lot of the time he normally addresses the team after a practice or after a game, and the media, like us in the media, have kind of joked about it. Like, we should, is it Babbel to learn a language? Is that what it's called? I think one of the,
yeah, I think Babbel's one of them. Duolingo.
That's the other one. We've been thinking, like, let's, like, we should, in all this time where it's 10 to 15, sometimes 20 minutes, if it's a really bad game, like, we should be learning a language. And then by the end of the year, we could all do a press availability with Pedersen in Swedish. And like, that would be unreal. And I think about it, I'm like, man, the hours that we've put in just standing around there doing nothing, we could have picked up a lot of Swedish at this point. So that's my next thing. I'm working on Swedish. I have started just like a couple little podcasts about how to learn some Swedish. So I'll be working on that in the next little bit here. That would be a lot of fun.
I look forward to the end of the season presser when you ask a question in Swedish. As we wrap up the show here, a few notes to all of our listeners. As always, you can support the show by going to support.c4podcast.com. It's our new supporter-funded program through Buy Me a Coffee. But Anna and I decided we'd prefer pints. Gives you an opportunity to support us on a regular basis, monthly or yearly, get a discount, or just one time where you can buy us a pint. You can also obviously find us in Discord talking about everything and anything. Right now, the conversations that are positive are about food. Because how can you go wrong with food? Except Anna, who said that we don't do bacon right. But what she implies is bacon is not bacon. And someone needs to express that to her. Have you ever had, like, the UK version of bacon?
I have a feeling it's not great from what I've heard about UK food.
I think we would interpret it as more like back bacon. But it's not back bacon.
Is it just like a slice of ham? That's what I see it as.
A thick slice of ham that's not like you have to cut. Like, it's essentially, why not have a ham steak?
Yeah. I'm down with a ham steak. And I don't know. I'd give it a try. Honestly, any breakfast meat is normally pretty good. I can't think of a bad breakfast meat. So, but okay. I'll just say it because I know Anna's too sassy for her own good. She's wrong. Whatever she says about the food take, it's wrong. I'll just say that. Thank you.
But yeah, joining Discord to have these conversations, discord.io/C4podcast. Faber, where can all our listeners find you? I'm sure they've already found you, but just in case they haven't.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ChrisFaber39. And if you wonder why it's 39, it's because I was born in the year 93. So there's a little fun fact.
Oh, I was almost out of high school by then. Anyhow. I am Chris Adelaide Forrest. He is Chris Faber at ChrisFaber_39. It's _39. Did I get that right? No. No 39. No underscore.
It doesn't matter. I don't want any more Twitter followers.
The problem is Anna's underscore number, and it always throws me off because it's just in my brain. I almost actually said you could follow Chris Faber at @AForsythe03.
I remember maybe it would have been seven years ago. I remember tweeting at an A Forsythe. It was a long time ago because I've listened to you guys. You know this. I've listened basically start with you guys. I remember tweeting, and then Anna tweeted back at me, "This is the wrong Anna Force," like all that stuff. So that was funny with the old underscore thing there.
Anyhow, we're out.